Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of One Vision, the FinTech Fuse. This is Theo, your host for the episode. And joining us today is an old friend, Sarah Kuczynski, a FinTech and InsurTech strategist and the newly minted CEO of FinTech Wales, a trade association and champion of FinTech and financial services companies in Wales. Welcome to the show, Sarah, and congratulations.
Thank you very much for having me, and thank you for the congratulations. I've been in the job now, this is my second week, so it's exciting. It's been a bit of a whirlwind, but yeah, it's brilliant, brilliant place to be, and I couldn't be prouder.
I can feel the excitement from the screen, which is amazing. Tell us a little bit more about FinTech Wales and what are some of the things that define the FinTech ecosystem in Wales?
So as you mentioned, FinTech Wales is a membership organization and we exist to help FinTech companies and financial services in Wales succeed in everywhere possible. I think what's kind of unusual about Wales, if you like, is that Welsh companies are hugely proud to be Welsh. And they want to ensure that the ecosystem as a whole thrives, that Wales as a country's profile is raised, because for your listeners who don't necessarily fully understand, you know, how the UK works, Wales is part of the UK, but it is a separate country. It has truly has its own identity, it has its own economy, it has, you know, its own industries. And so that's something that everybody who lives and works in Wales wants to promote and wants to make sure the rest of the world understands. But the way that kind of like feeds back, I guess, into FinTech Wales and the Welsh FinTech industry is that our ecosystem is really hugely collaborative. So we have large companies always willing to give up their time to support the startups and the scale-ups. And you just don't see that everywhere. You know, I've worked in FinTech in London for got over 10 years. I've worked with fintechs across the US, and I think the collaboration is something that is really quite unique to FinTech Wales and to the industry here.
That I had to chuckle when you were talking about collaboration, because that's something I felt like we have quite a bit too, between, at least in the US, between the two coasts. You have the San Francisco and the New York, and they're constantly competing, and then you add Boston to the mix and the rest. Oh well, it's a fun and interesting place to be. I know this is still really early on, but I do have to ask you, what are some of the top priorities that you have for this year?
Well, the first one is, like, our job is to really deliver value for our members. And as I said, to promote and support the Welsh FinTech ecosystem globally. And that's what we do. So that's my top priority. That's the, you know, the core reason for being. I think, you know, this year in particular, we're here to help our members continue to scale. It's a challenging business environment for everybody. It doesn't really matter where you are in the world right now or where you are in the UK right now, it's challenging. So we have to make sure that we're doing the best we can to help our members overcome that. To do that, we need to kind of work on the momentum we built last year. We need to ensure that investment and funding continue to flow into Wales. You know, that's a key thing for us, is bringing investors here, helping them fully understand the Welsh FinTech ecosystem and, you know, the great companies we have here. And another thing is, for us, it's a bit cliche, but it's truly important to us, and that's skills and talent. It's a huge area of focus for us. Again, especially pertinent given the environment, right? Everybody is struggling. There have been layoffs across, you know, across the UK, across the US, and then to a certain extent that does apply in Wales as well. So we want to make sure that we're helping everybody reskill, upskill wherever necessary. We work with a number of partners to deliver tech and fintech specific coding academies, and they help underemployed people enter new careers. So I think, you know, the priority for me as CEO of a business is the same priority as any other CEO of any other business. It's success, and it's success in a challenging environment.
It is success in a challenging environment, but it did remind me of the last downturn that we had, after which we saw a lot of really interesting and successful companies. So hopefully this is what we're going to see this round as well. Now, when you were talking about the three things, the scale up, funding, and skills and talent, it reminds me of what I read recently, the FinTech Wales annual report, because those are some of the points that they touched upon as well. But there's one thing specifically around gender equality, and that stood out to me, because the percentage of female angel investors in Wales, as it was reported, is higher than anywhere else in the UK, almost 29%. I wish we have that in the US, actually. And there's a good presence of senior women at prominent Welsh financial services and fintech companies. I know it is not a magic wand that was waived and somehow they just appeared. What are some of the lessons learned for other regions, things that we can learn?
Yeah, no, they're spectacular numbers. And, you know, obviously there's always more that can be done, but it does warm my heart that Wales does very well in this area. I should also give the caveat that I wrote that report before I was employed at FinTech Wales. So if you go and look for FinTech Wales's last two annual reports, I wrote them. But that was in my previous life as a freelancer. So, you know, just to be clear, just for clarity's sake. But, you know, to answer your question, I think, as I mentioned, the Welsh ecosystem is hugely collaborative, right? And that helps people looking for investment opportunities to both find each other and potential investment targets. One thing we have here that is pretty special to Wales is we have the Women Angels of Wales Network. And that consists of more than 30 of Wales's most successful women entrepreneurs and business leaders. And it's an angel syndicate, which has the aim of supporting and encouraging women in early stage investment. And that's pretty unusual, but it's not necessarily unique. But I think one thing that does empower that syndicate to perhaps have more impact than maybe elsewhere is that because it's a syndicate, it can access the Development Bank of Wales's co-investment fund. So that is a fund that matches angel funding when certain circumstances are met. And it's really crucial it's a crucial lifeline both for kind of fintechs in Wales to access the funding they need, but also really, really supports that angel network and really helps them kind of both, you know, make the best investments they can, but also shows to people wanting to get involved in angel investing that people care about it here and people want to help angels succeed.
Well, I love that. I don't think we have anything similar. I mean, we have initiatives that brings talent and startups into specific regions, but it feels more like competitive because different jurisdictions, they want to have businesses come in, but not things such as what you were talking about matching. That is interesting. Looking more broadly, we're now already a few months into 2024. I can't believe it. What are some of the trends that still excite you and why? Do you think we can actually get away without saying the two-letter acronym for the next 20 minutes?
I don't think for the next 20 minutes, because I think you're going to ask me about that specifically. But I can definitely talk about, there's three things that I think have really stood out to me so far this year. To go back to your earlier point, you know, after the last downturn, we saw a lot of innovation in financial services and fintech, particularly in that case around credit and access to credit because the banks stopped lending. Well, I think what we're seeing a lot of, you know, certainly so far this year and certainly here in Wales is what, I hate the term fintech for good, but that's probably the best way to describe it. We're seeing that sort of start to come to the fore. We've got a lot of companies working on that in various ways in Wales. They're helping companies complete sustainability reports. They're helping people more easily access appropriate credit. This isn't a Welsh company, but it was kind of all over the news, so I thought it was worth mentioning because it's in this category. There was a story about a card, an app that helps the families of people with dementia ensure their relatives can maintain some form of financial freedom, but in a way that ensures they aren't taken advantage of. That raised money on Dragon's Den. What is the US version, Shark Tank? Is that what you call it?
Yeah, but we actually do have a product that does exactly that. The founder started the card because his grandparents, I think it was grandfather, got scammed. And so he's like, you know, we need to do something that can give the caretaker more oversight or at least visibility on what's going on and minimize the damage and all of that. So I am actually really surprised I don't see more of these products in mainstream.
Yeah. I mean, this one was founded by a lady who both her parents struggle with forms of dementia. And as you say, her mum, you know, was getting herself into a terrible mess because she couldn't remember where she'd taken money out. She couldn't remember what she'd paid if she hadn't paid. So I think hopefully we'll start to see more of that kind of product. I think, you know, not necessarily linked to that, but certainly perhaps that demographic. People don't pay enough attention. And this is something that a dear friend of mine, Helen Panzanero, talks about a lot, is that older people, like if you want to call them silver fintech, like those people have money, but there's not many products that are targeting them and that are designed for them and helping them manage their financial lives. So that's something I want to see more of. On a different note, I think cybersecurity is one that's not going anywhere, right? There's so much talk about fraud at the moment. Regulators are getting very hot on, you know, attributing blame. And certainly here in the UK, they are pushing a lot of that blame to financial institutions that aren't trying hard enough to prevent things like APP fraud. So I think the fraud prevention is an area we're going to see a lot more activity in. Again, if people's circumstances change and perhaps they have less income and less money than before, they're more likely to fall prey to some of these scams because they're struggling and that they're looking for a way to kind of ease the pain of that. So that's an area that I think we're going to continue to see a lot of innovation in this year. And then there was just one news story, which I'm sure it's a good news story, but I'm sure you've heard already, but it's the Monzo's investment. The investment round wasn't necessarily a surprise, if you like, but I was really interested to see Capital G going in on the round, especially given, you know, Tencent's already an investor in Monzo and came in on this round as well. So great news that Monzo's, you know, got this funding and just an interesting new investor in the mix.
Do you think we might see some IPOs eventually?
I think we'll see some IPOs in the US. I think here in the UK, it might take a little bit longer. Our IPO history and ecosystem, we like, is a little bit more nascent anyway. We don't necessarily have the track record that you have in the US. I think there's a perception that risk appetite here is lower than it is in the US, which pushes people to either IPO later or choose to IPO somewhere else like the US. I would love to see some IPOs. I'd love to see Monzo IPO. I'd love to see Starling IPO. You know, I think that would be brilliant. But obviously those companies are going to make the decision to do that when it's right for them and in the way that is best for them, you know, given their own circumstances.
Yeah, I agree. But we've been sitting on the side for, gosh, the last 2 years now, right? Hasn't it? Capital has been building up. Everyone is saying, okay, it's coming. I would love for us to get out of this waiting and seeing and laying off people stage. I love what you were just talking about, helping to reskill, upskill talent, the coding academy. That's the one thing I wish we would see more, especially with all the layoffs that we've been witnessing since January. It's scary in one way, like, why are everyone laying off hundreds and thousands of people? Who's doing all the work? Do we have less work? Are things getting more efficient? What is the story and where are all these people going? Because the numbers are getting ridiculously high right now. I would love to hear more financial services company, especially those who keep saying, well, you know, we see the potential of using technology to help us do things more efficiently. By the way, this is how we're helping people adapt and adopt new skills and stay around.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, obviously our coding academies are quite specific and they're targeting people who have not necessarily come out of fintech. They're targeting people who perhaps haven't got those skills or haven't had access to training. I think that's an important thing. Again, you know, we can take it for granted a bit that people like you and I have access to all sorts of training and we know what kind of training we need to do our jobs better. And I don't think that that's something that a lot of people have. I think, you know, with the layoffs, from what I can see, a lot of it has been in the classic kind of business development and sales areas, which would kind of make sense as companies look to prioritize sustainability over rapid growth. But I think, to sort of address the elephant in the room, I think there's also been a lot of fear-mongering about job losses based on new technologies, which I don't necessarily think is fair. I think jobs are changing, and, you know, we don't have time for this today, but if you're looking at the whole future of work topic and that whole area, and as, you know, Sharon O'Day, another good friend, says, what is a job anymore? Like, jobs are changing, job descriptions are changing. So I think what we have to do is take an optimistic view and a positive view and say that technology is actually changing jobs, but it is making it easier for people to do certain jobs. And certainly in the short run, you know, that's what I see happening in financial services. I mean, if you're looking at areas like customer service, you know, there's all sorts of technology now which can help employees deal with less complicated queries more efficiently by either handling them completely on an employee's behalf or by helping them find answers more quickly. That frees up employees to A, you know, feel good about themselves because they're helping more people, and B, you know, spend more time on complex issues. And, you know, to our earlier point, perhaps spend some more time on training so they can move up a level, so they can, you know, be promoted. You know, I think other areas with technology, you know, it's already been quite easily, you know, quite widely used to help tackle fraud, as we were just talking about. You know, some of these systems and these programs and these algorithms can more quickly and effectively pick up both potentially fraudulent activity as well as ascertain if fraud is actually occurring. Well, a lot of fraud and risks team time is taken up really manually with assessing false positives. So if technology can take some of that work away from them, or if it can help them do their jobs better, if it has making them potentially a more skilled employee because they're not spending their time just doing manual checks and they can actually do a broader range of tasks, that's hugely important. You know, I think one of the things that perhaps you know, some of these things, but we're talking about applications, I think there is some caution with some of these applications as well. We need to make sure the focus on avoiding kind of like black box systems, you know, come into play where these technology systems are making decisions that affect people's lives, but can't explain their rationale. And that goes the same to kind of like how you're using it in a job, like to your point about upskilling, reskilling. People need to know how to. There's no such thing as good or bad technology. You just need to know how to use it, and you need to know how to use it to benefit you and the company and everything else. So I think, yeah, that's something that we need to, when we're looking at both the systems that are implemented, you know, kind of in terms of the decisions they're making, but also in how people are using them, make sure we're not just falling into the trap of going, oh, well, I don't know how the system works, but the system does it, so that's fine, because that doesn't help anybody.
That last comment that you just made, we don't know how it works, but we're just gonna follow it. That was one of the guidance that came out in the US that says if you are you going to be using tech to, let's say, whether or not you're going to approve a loan, you better be able to explain it. You can't just say, oops, the bot did it. And
Yeah.
right. And I think that's where some of the cautions set in. I also heard someone else say, let's not overuse technology for something that we can just do what with what we have because it becomes an overkill. Someone, I think, was using the analogy of using a Bulgari to deliver pizza. That's what it feels like right now when with some of the tech that we're using to, let's say, write a marketing press release or something like that. There are a lot of things that we can still do without over applying technology. But on the other side, though, where do you see some of the promising use cases we can use tech for? We touched upon fraud. I think that's a huge, huge problem. We touched a little bit upon customer care issues. We've seen technology being used in call centers, propping up different answers, propping up different search results, and help them get to the responses faster. Looking beyond the low-hanging fruit, what are some of the things that get you excited?
So I think there's more to be done in kind of credit underwriting, definitely. There's wherever you are in the kind of generally, let's call it the Western world, but if you're looking at Europe, the UK, the US, credit models are baffling, and you know, credit agencies have monopolies, and that shouldn't be a thing. That shouldn't be how somebody decides whether you can get appropriate finance that could enable you to have a better future. Like you could be looking for finance to undertake an education, to you know, promote your business and then enable that business to scale. So that's definitely something that there is more work to be done in. And also technology, as I said, there is no such thing as good or bad technology. It can be used to help eradicate some of the biases that are already in the system. If okay, it can also be used to make those biases worse. But I think as long as we're aware of it, there's potential, huge potential there to make systems fairer, certainly in the credit world. And I think there's also huge potential in insurance. That's another place where, you know, underwriting and risk modeling are very, very archaic processes in a lot of cases. And that means, again, people can't get appropriate coverage, or a lot of insurance coverage is just blanket, it's not personalized. Well, everybody's individual, that doesn't really work. You know, products are old-fashioned, they don't suit the way people live their lives anymore. You know, you don't There are so many more people who have got two jobs, or who are freelancers, or who work from home more often, or you know, all that kind of stuff. Can't ignore climate change. You know, people's houses are much more at risk of being flooded or burnt down, or you know, hit by other climate disasters. So I think there's huge potential with technology to help insurance catch up with actually the way that you know, 2024, and the way people live and work and just live their lives. The one thing I would say there is that that's definitely an opportunity, because insurers are worse than bankers, if it's possible, at having data that is, well, I don't know, digitized. A lot of insurers just have a lot of data on bits of paper in you know, basements, let alone in a clean format that can be used and ingested, you know, to improve products and services. But I maintain it's a huge opportunity, and I think we will get there, because I think insurers are starting to see the benefit of technology to help them keep their customers happy, better serve their customers, and at the end of the day, you know, promote prevention rather than cure, which is what everybody wants.
One of the insurtech, I believe the first insurtech unicorn in the US, actually actively use technology in their modeling, in site surveillance, in determining how much they need to pay the insurer from damages. And I think they do precisely cite the use of tech to help them do things more efficiently and price things more accurately compared to before. So much to be done. See, we have avoided using that word so far. I'm working on it.
This is a brain exercise for this point on a Monday for me, I tell you, like, to avoid using it. I'm very proud of myself.
I am very proud of us. So before we close, here's one fun question for you. If you were to put three things in a time capsule that will be opened in 50 years by a future FinTech Wales CEO, what would you put in there and why?
So this is actually the most difficult question.
It's a fun one.
It is. So the first thing is, so my first day as CEO was Friday, the 1st of March, which for you international listeners who might not know, that's St. David's Day. That's the National Day of Wales. And so FinTech Wales was invited to open the London Stock Exchange. So my first day, 7 a.m, I'm standing at the London Stock Exchange opening it, which was a first day that won't ever be bettered, I suspect. But off the back of that, what they gave us was a glass tablet, and it sort of inscribed, and it commemorates that we opened the LSE on St. David's Day 2024. So that's priceless. And, you know, that definitely should be something that goes in into the time capsule. Really boring one, but like, I would like to put our business plan in there, our 3 to 5 year strategy, and just see if it came true or not. Do you know what I mean? Like, to just get somebody to look back at it. Because sometimes I think people don't look back at, this is the serious point here, is that sometimes I think people just keep iterating and iterating and iterating and don't look back for where they started. And then the last one, I wasn't sure because I'm here to promote FinTech Wales, and I'm here to talk about Wales as a country and the amazing companies we have here. And I wasn't sure, and this will make your Welsh listeners laugh and a lot of your international listeners look puzzled, whether to put a rugby ball or a daffodil in. So rugby is essentially our national sport here. You know, and I was saying that we're very, very passionate about being Welsh. There is no experience like going to see the Welsh national rugby team play at their home ground. And another thing that you might know about the Welsh is that we can sing, and singing is just amazing. So whether it's something like that or the daffodil, it's the national flower of Wales. And it's one of the things that we want to do as FinTech Wales is to make sure, and this is not my slogan, this is my predecessor's slogan, but I've adopted it, is to make sure that Welsh people are louder and prouder about what we do here and what an amazing country it is and what an amazing ecosystem we have. So that was, third one was just like a symbol to show that we are Welsh, we're proud to be Welsh, and we should never forget that.
That is an amazing way to end our conversation, proud to be Welsh. Much to learn I have, but this is amazing, and congrats again on a fascinating, exciting, and busy journey. Let's hope that next time when I come back to London, I can actually see you.
Yeah, you should come to Cardiff. I'll show you around Cardiff. We'll do a FinTech tour. Brilliant.
You know what? We should think about that. That might be fun as an extension of FinTech Week. Why not?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Sarah, for joining us today. And for the rest of our listeners, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of One Vision FinTech Views. We will talk to you all next week.